Good morning. I appreciate you coming, and because I'll tell you what, when I got the invitation to come over here and speak, first of all, there was a great deal of confusion. I got an email from Terry Resch, and he said, hey, we would like for you to come to Tulsa and speak. And he had a man's name on the email, and it said, this guy who is a member of your congregation recommended you to come. And I went, I don't know this guy. And we're not that big a church. So I emailed him back and said, think you got the wrong guy. Thanks for the invitation. He goes, no, it's you that we want. I said, I don't think so. He said, yeah, it is. And so I took my computer and I took a picture of myself, emailed the picture to him and said, this is me. Are you sure it's me you want? He said, yes, it is you. Well, I'm Daniel Dickard. I've been the pastor at Springdale Christian Church for 17, in our 18th year. This year they changed my title a little bit. We appointed elders. The church had not had elders since the entire time that I had been there. And we went through a study that I'll tell you about in just a little bit, that just some things came to life. And we appointed elders, and everybody that we suggested to be an elder, you know, you go through that process. Everybody that kept coming up and we say, you know, will you serve? They said, we will only serve, Daniel, if you will serve. And so I became an elder, and that took us years really to get to that point, but it took us a month just to go through the study process. We studied it Sunday morning, Wednesday night, and talked about it throughout a whole month just getting ready, and that was after us preparing the men to do it. And so I became an elder, and the first elders meeting they said, okay, this is the deal. One of the guys made a motion that we fire the preacher, and I seconded it, and then explained the order of who was going to be speaking to fill in for me. And they said, okay, we rescind that vote. So I'm still there. And I do appreciate you being here today. Tony Campolo, I had an opportunity to hear Tony Campolo, and you may or may not know who he is, but I had an opportunity to hear him speak many, many years ago, and he told this story about being flying into Honolulu and woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning and could not sleep because of the time change and everything of being in Hawaii. And so he gets up and he's walking the streets from his motel, and he leaves his motel, and he gets to this little cafe. And while he's in this little cafe, he orders a donut and a cup of coffee, and he's eating it. And about that time, this group of women walk in. And he's listening to these women talk, but he's not really paying attention. He's thinking, this is a strange time for these ladies, and thinking, well, they've left the clubs and the bars, and they've come in here to have coffee before they go home. And as he's listening to them, one of them says, tomorrow is my birthday. And the other lady said, big deal. So what? It's your birthday. And she said, well, you don't have to be so mean about it. And they leave. And so he begins talking with the cafe owner. He says, who were those ladies? And he says, those ladies are all prostitutes, and they come in here every morning after their night's work. And so he said, well, did you realize that one of them's birthday is tomorrow? And the guy said, no. And he goes, could we have a cake? Do you think they'll come back in the morning? He said, yeah, I think they will. And he said, could we have a cake and a party for this lady? And he went, I don't see why we couldn't. So he gave the guy some money, and they ordered a cake. And the next morning, these ladies come walking in, and she cannot believe it. Here's a banner with her name on it, happy birthday. And she is so surprised. And Tony introduces himself, and they're having this party, and they're doing all this stuff, and they're doing it. And suddenly the lady breaks down and cries and says, I'll be right back. And she left. And she came back in about 10 minutes, and she brings her mother in her nightgown and her house coat and her house shoes. And she's like, she's telling me there's a birthday party for her here, and I can't believe it. And so, yeah, here is this birthday party. And so as it goes on, the cafe owner finally looks at Tony Campolo, and he goes, who are you? And he said, well, I'm Tony Campolo. And he goes, well, that doesn't mean anything to me. What are you, some kind of preacher? And he said, Well, as a matter of fact, I am. I preach for a church, and he says, I travel about and I preach. He goes, well, what kind of church do you preach for? And he said, one that throws birthday parties for whores and prostitutes. And he said, no, you don't. If a church like that existed, I would be a member. I think that's the way our culture is. Our culture is looking for acceptance. Our culture is looking for forgiveness. Our culture is looking for things. I heard a guy talk just this morning in a conversation, and he was talking about the book of Hosea, and he was talking about the relationship between Hosea and Gomer, and it I thought, wow, that goes with my lesson. I'm going to steal that. And so I'll share what he said. He said, you know, in the book of Hosea, God tells Hosea to go take Gomer back, if you remember that story, and he says, go love her again, and the meaning is to go romance her again. Go get her back. Go show her love. And every one of us in this room can admit that we're a Gomer. We've messed up. We've sinned. Our sin is ugly to God, and yet God loves us so much that He wants us back. He wants that relationship with us. Today, my topic, experiencing the real Jesus in a wobbly culture, you can approach this from a lot of different ways. And so this is how I am going to do it. We're going to be in the book of Luke. We're going to look at some things. I've been studying the book of Luke with the church in Springdale since the Sunday after Easter last year. And a couple of weeks ago, we had just made it to chapter 12. Last week, we jumped way forward in the book of Luke, and then we'll go through the resurrection on Easter Sunday. But we've just lived and camped out in the book of Luke, and it has been eye-opening and life-changing for me. And there was an event that took place in my own life in 2010. I spent a great deal of time in the woods. I love to hunt, and it is just very important to me. And in 2011, every time I would get in a deer stand, and I carry this waterproof New Testament with me, and I would get my Bible out and I'd be reading after a time when I didn't think the deer were going to be stirring. You know, windy days, things that I could sit in that tree stand and rock back and forth in the wind and read. And God began to really deal with me personally and really began to work on my heart. And it was as though God spoke to me and said, hey, there needs to be some changes. You've been with this church a long time, and there needs to be some things that need to happen. And so I came back with a new determination, and then this we studied. We if you knew Springdale Christian Church, or there's not another church like us. We're the oddest bunch of people you've ever seen. First of all, they let me be the pastor, so hey, that tells you something. But the church there, we came back and I said, there needs to be a change. And one of the guys says, I don't know what happened to you. They give me a month's vacation. And believe it or not, that's where I will spend a month in the woods hunting. And they said, we don't know what happened on that month, but something happened to you. And I said, well, I'm scared to tell you because I think you'll think I'm crazy. But I said, God has spoke to me and some things began to happen. One of the things that we discovered was we hate gimmicks. And I think that we try to gimmick our culture. The church tries to gimmick things. Just this morning, we're on our way here, and as we're driving down the road, we pass this church, and Deb goes, well, look at that. That's interesting. And there was a church that said, free iPads Easter Sunday. I said, what are we doing? Oh, yeah, I know what we're doing Easter. You know, because I'd drive over here and get a free iPad. You know, something would be offered. Well, we don't like gimmicks. And what we were doing, we didn't realize what we were doing, is everything we tried to do in the church sounded and smelled and looked like a gimmick. We tried to manipulate people into doing things they didn't want to do. And, you know, when you think about what our culture does, is that we look at our culture offends us. Our culture around us does things that bother us. We see how messed up it is. Well, sadly, our culture looks at the church and goes, you reflect us. You're just as messed up as we are, and then you try to gimmick us. You try to change things. You try to mess with things. And to the point that I got a call one day, and this guy said, hey, are you the pastor there? And I said, yeah. And he goes, man, I really need to talk to you. He said, my life's in a mess. My family's in a mess, and there's things going on in my life. And he began to talk to me, and he said, He said, my wife is suggesting some things that I'm not sure about. And I said, okay, what's that? He goes, well, she wants to change our marriage into a poly relationship. I didn't know what that was. I'm just an old country boy, and I'm going, poly relationship? I don't know what that is. Well, thankfully, my laptop is there, and I open it up. And so while I'm talking to him, holding the phone here, I'm typing in poly relationship, going, what am I going to pull up? And it pulled it up, and I'm reading about it, and I'm like, oh. And so I'm like, whoa. And I will tell you, I went home that afternoon. I went, honey, if you're looking on my laptop and you see some things, I'm not particularly interested in that. Here's why I was doing it. Well, one of the things that I found was this website that said the 12 top struggles that go on in this relationship. So I just pull it up and I start telling the guy about those 12 top things. He goes, man, you're the smartest man I've ever talked to in my life. I go, yeah, me and Google. Well, I didn't tell him the Google part, but our culture is a mess. But I think the church, we get arrogant that we go, here, let us tell you how to straighten up. What we really tell people is how to be more religious. And so my topic is experiencing the real Jesus in a wobbly culture. So we don't like gimmicks. So we said to the church, we don't like gimmicks. And we've tried everything to start things. And we've always been kind of a non-ministry church. Nobody wanted to be a part, so we just didn't have them. We told ourselves the reason people didn't want to, that we were just a non-ministry church, so we just wouldn't have ministries. We wouldn't have programs. We wouldn't have those things that would die on the vine and, you know, people would lose interest in. So we just won't do that. And then we turn around and we try to, you know, gimmick it. We read Wild at Heart and went, oh, man, we've got to be the Wild Bunch. So a bunch of us guys got together. But churches do that, don't they? I mean, we have motorcycle clubs. We have golf clubs, tennis, you know, whatever. We play softball. We do whatever. Well, no wife could complain to her husband if he says to her, hey, honey, I'm going to go on a motorcycle ride this weekend with the guys from church. You know, it's going to be a big spiritual event. And she's going, here's this list of things I need you to do. This list is a mile long, and I need you to take care of these things and deal with them. And he's going, but it's ministry. It's for the church. What wife could possibly complain about that? We guys have got that figured out. And so we manipulate and we do. Well, we did the same thing. We had a gun club. We ran out of ammunition. We did retreats. We did campouts. We did all kinds of things. Well, my wife's as big a hunter and as big a want to be in the woods as I am. And so we built a cabin and bought some acreage, and we protect that woods like crazy. And I'd say, honey, I'm going to be taking the guys out there. And she'd go, well, that's not fair. I want to go too. And so then it had to be a co-ed thing. Well, then we had Debbie, who loves to be in the woods, fits in with the guys better than she does the girls. You got these whiny women out there going, we have to use that outhouse. Oh, my God, you know. And then you get the guys that are as whiny as they are. I don't mean to be offensive, but they're out there going, I can't get any cell phone service, and I can't check my Facebook. I'll tell them which tree stand they can go to, and if you get up in there and you stand just right, you can get a signal. It's a wonderful, wonderful isolated place. So we started thinking, what would be real? And my son and I was talking one day, and he goes, Dad, there every one of my friends, he's in his early 20s, he just turned 24, so he was 22 at the time. He said, every one of my friends that meet you, they just love you. They want to be a part of things. They want to be, they just want to be around you. They want to hang out. In fact, last Saturday night, he called, he texted me. He goes, what are you doing? And I said, we're just sitting around, you know. It's about 8:30 at night. And he goes, what time are you going to bed? Because he knows we turn in early. We're old and, you know, want to go to bed early. And he goes, what time are you going to bed? And I said, it's all sometime after 10. He goes, okay, great. We got time. Hey, they were having a birthday party for him. And so the whole birthday party moves to our house. Well, because they found out Deb had made him a peanut butter pie. So they came down to eat this pie and to hang out. And out of that, one of the young couples said, hey, we would like for you to do our wedding. And so there were, you know, some good things that came out of that. He said, they want to hang out with you. What could we do that would be real? What could we do that wouldn't manipulate anybody? And so we came up with a Bible study. And again, I do not mean to offend anybody, but we came up with... There is a huge motorcycle rally that takes place in Fayetteville, Arkansas, which is just south of Springdale. Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue. And I said, well, we could play off Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue somewhere. So we came up with the BB&B. And I'm almost hesitant to tell you what that stands for. It stands for Burgers, Beer, and Bible Study. And so, let me tell you, you advertise that, the guys will come. And last Monday, 2 weeks ago, I was cooking burgers. And one of the guys called me, it's never been, and he says, what can I bring? And I said, well, I've got this, 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 and this coming. And he said, okay, hey, that's great. I'll be. He goes, how about, and he laughs real big, I'll just bring a six pack. And I went, okay. And so he was like, really? I went, yeah, really? I can bring a six pack to the preacher's house. Yeah, I don't care. It's the important thing is we're going to be real with one another. Because I'm going to be honest with you, we hide and we cover up things. Why not just have it out in the open? Why not just teach about it? Why not just address it? So we started that. What was amazing, and let me tell you what happened out of that study. That study started off, there were marriages changed. There were men that went home and said, I'm going to be a good husband to my wife. There were relationships changed. There were elders and deacons that came out of that Bible study. There have been people that have come to Jesus out of that Bible study. It continues to go. We go every other Monday. The guys will have begged me, can we do it every Monday? No. I have to have Monday. I have one Monday with nothing to do. Oh, man, we've got to have it. No, we can't have it every Monday. I'm not telling you to go home and start beers, burgers, and Bible study. I'm just saying that you find what's real, you find what works. Because our culture doesn't do that. Because our culture sees us in a different light. In the book, Three Free Sins, by a man named Steve Brown, he has this little blurb, and he says, I received this letter from a friend. You have to work hard to offend Christians. By nature, Christians are the most forgiving, understanding, and thoughtful group of people I've ever dealt with. They never assume the worst. They appreciate the importance of having different perspectives. They're slow to anger, quick to forgive, and almost never make rash judgments or act anything less than the spirit of love. Oh, wait. I was thinking about Labrador Retrievers. I think that, you know, that whatever is real, whatever works for you. One of the things that we said is, okay, we're not going to do anything that's going to gimmick our community. We're not going to. We're going to be real. And if you've ever seen the documentary Catfish, it's about a man named Neve who has an online relationship. And in this online relationship, it goes on. And I mean, he's madly in love. And my son and I watched this documentary, and it's now a TV show on MTV. And I don't watch a lot of TV, but I watch MTV when Catfish is on because it fascinates me. Well, we're watching this documentary, and the girl had sent him pictures. And so the pictures that he put in the documentary, I look at my 24-year-old and my 15-year-old, and I said, I see why he fell in love with her. You could light a cigarette off the pictures. That girl's hot. And James goes, tell me about it. Well, he gets to meet her. He goes to meet her, and he meets her mother. Turns out he's been talking to her mother all along. And the term catfish came out of that, and there's a story behind that. I just encourage you to watch it. I think we catfish our culture. We, as a church, we catfish our culture. We tell them one thing. We hold Jesus up over here, and as Jesus is being held up over here, here's Jesus. And then they come into the church, and we have something totally different for them. All of a sudden, we have religion. And they go, wait a minute. You sold me Jesus. And now I'm hearing what? I'm hearing religion. We catfish people. We fool them. They see one thing and we tell them just the opposite. Because the reason that people can be catfished, the reason that people will post fake pictures online is because you can be anybody you want to be. Now think about that. You don't have to interact with them. If you've ever watched Duck Dynasty, on Duck Dynasty, Phil talks to Cy one day, and he says, Cy, I went over to the house. The grandsons are typing online. He goes, what are you doing? Your homework? No, talking to my girlfriend. And Cy asks a reasonable question. Where's their girlfriend? He said, well, their girlfriend is probably a block down the street. And Cy says, why are you talking to her online? That's silly. Girls smell nice. Why aren't they down the street? But see, it is so much easier to communicate through a computer screen. And so we communicate that way. And also, people don't have to know the real you. We are afraid for people to see who we really are. And, you know, I broke out of that a long time ago. I said, man, I am going to be Daniel. And I played the religious guy, and I played that. Miranda Lambert has a song, Not My Mother's Broken Heart. And in that song, she's brokenhearted. She's hurting. And her mother hears about it. And her mother is so upset, her mother comes over and says, I'm not going to have that. You need to get on in there, fix your hair, put your makeup on, hide your crazy, and start acting like a lady. Because it's not about what's on the inside, it's what people see on the outside. And I think that that's what we do, is that we hide who we are and we're afraid to do that. Well, then all of a sudden you see Jesus, and when we see Jesus, we're all of a sudden we're like just amazed, and we have to stay on track with Jesus. You know, one of the things that we've really struggled with is, you know, last year I'm sitting in the woods. Now you got a picture of this with me. I'm in the woods. I'm in full camo, and I almost wore full camo today, but I didn't. So I just brought my hat that I normally wear, and I've been known to preach this way at home. But so you got a picture of this. I got my hat. I got my glasses on, and I got my war paint on. All right. Well, now I've done that long before Duck Dynasty ever came out, because I'm a huge Duck Commander fan. I go back with Phil Robertson when Phil Robertson was shooting ducks and biting heads. Okay, so that's it. So here I am. I got my war paint on, my beard, full camo, sitting there, and I thought, I'm going to aggravate one of the guys at church because he had to work and couldn't be hunting. So I take my phone, I take my picture, and I text him the picture. He goes, "Holy cow, that's awesome." He goes, "Here, we're going to have a caption contest at church with this picture, and we're going to advertise with this." So I said, "All right." And so they came up with this caption: "Real men take their families to church on Easter Sunday." And then one of the guys goes, "Man, that's going to be really gimmicky, because if we do that, people are going to say we're playing off of the gimmick of Duck Dynasty, because Duck Dynasty is so popular. It came out last year, and here they are already in their third season in less than a year. And it's just people have responded to it, and it's, you know, a good message." I said, "Well, that's too gimmicky." And so we talked about it. Well, there's a good chance you can see our ad in the paper next week. We'll even overrule ourselves. So turn to Luke chapter 4. However you look at the Bible, whether it be, you know, I'll say turn your Bible, and then people are looking on their iPads and all kinds of things. And we're gonna work through Luke, and we're going to have to hurry because I've taken too much time here. In Luke chapter 4, there's an interesting thing that takes place. Jesus is in Nazareth. It's the story that most of us know, but there's something interesting that takes place here. In Luke chapter 4, beginning in verse 18, it says, "He went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath, he went into the synagogue, as was his custom, and he stood up to read. And on the scroll, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed him, and unrolling it, he found the place where it is written." Now let me tell you what I always heard from this text, and what I always got out of this, as was his custom. We make this a religious thing, and we'll preach and hound people, as was Jesus' custom, he was in church. It was on Saturday, it was in the synagogue, but we'll switch it, and we'll go, as Jesus was, see, the custom is, we ought to be, and then we go to Hebrews, and we go, don't miss church, and we do all that. Let me tell you, I think fellowshipping with other believers and being together is so important. I love it. I miss it. If I'm gone, I'm missing it. I'm wondering, you know, what are they doing? Are they missing me? And that kind of thing. And yet, there's something so powerful here in the rest of this. Look at what he reads. He says, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom to the prisoners, recovery of the sight to the blind, and set the oppressed free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Now, if you go on and you read the rest of this, Jesus says, "Today this has been fulfilled in your hearing," and it makes everybody mad and they want to kill him. There's a religious thing that gets started here. But notice what Jesus says. He says some things here. He says, "I've come to proclaim good news to the poor, freedom to prisoners, recovery of the sight to the blind, and set the oppressed free." If we're not going to catfish our culture, the way not to catfish our culture is to be on track with Jesus. To experience Jesus, means we've got to act like, live like, think like Jesus. Now, notice what Jesus says. He goes to Isaiah, what we would know as Isaiah 61, 1 and 2, And it's amazing to me when I think about that Jesus knew where that was in an Isaiah scroll, because it didn't have book, chapter, and verses. And he goes there and he gets it and he focuses. He said, there is good news for the poor. And think about when you study the reaction of the religious people in Jesus' day to the poor. If you were poor, there was something wrong with you. If you were poor, you'd done something wrong and God was punishing you. And Jesus comes along and he changes the whole attitude. And he says, I'm a Messiah. I've come for the poor. And it totally changed my attitude. And one of the things that we've done for years is we've been known in Northwest Arkansas, specifically the Springdale area, as oftentimes we've been labeled the Church of the Poor, because we have a huge ministry that feeds people and does things. And we've always tried to be very good to the poor. And we've said, we're not going to treat you like the revenue office. And if you have ever been to the revenue office in Arkansas, you'd understand what I'm talking about. It's awful. You're a number. You're a nobody. And they don't care. And oftentimes what we do with the poor is they come in, they want their food, they need something. We look at the mess that they've made of their life and we cannot possibly understand it. And we don't even try. And so we've tried to do that. One of the things that we've done is we've tried to put names to them and do things. And he says, I've got good news for the poor. Just because you're poor doesn't mean you're any less one of God's. God loves the poor. Go back and read the Old Testament. Time and time again, he took care of the poor. Freedom to prisoners. There are people that are trapped. Is he just talking about those in prison? Or is he talking about people that are in a cage of their own life, oppressed by what's going on around them? I'll never forget the very first time I had some ladies come in to see me. It was in the early days of our food ministry, and they came in, and I was there by myself, and here they are in the office, and they're talking to me, and they're visiting with me, and they're sharing with me. And I said, what are you ladies doing? They said, oh, we work at this motel up the road. Well, I'm thinking of maids, counter help, you know, all kinds of things like that. And so I'm asking the silly questions. I've learned not to ask certain questions. You know, I mean, there's just certain things you don't do, okay? If you don't want to know. And so I'm asking, and finally one of them goes, I work on my back, I work on my side, you know, and I'm like, I get the picture. I know what you do now. What do you need? So, well, we need some food, and then one of them pulls out a prescription, and she says, I need this prescription filled. And I'm like, well, what's it for? And she was very ashamed, and it was for an STD. And she said, I need this, and I, you know, I'm embarrassed to even tell you what this is for, but I'm just going to be honest. And I wrote a check to the pharmacy. And I caught a lot of flack over that. I had some people so angry at me because I was writing a check to a woman. And I said, I looked at it as community service. And one of the guys goes, community service? I go, some guy will not have to explain anything to anybody. And they got a laugh out of that and said, okay, we understand. You know, I think that we've got to be on the forefront. You know what's amazing is when she got ready to go, she hugged me. And she goes, you're the first man I've met in years that showed love and compassion to me and didn't want anything out of it. Nothing. That you would share with me. And we became friends, and they came back. And we helped them. And then one day she came in and she introduced me to a guy that she'd met, and she said, I met him through Samaritan House Ministries, and we're going to get married, and can you come to the wedding? And I'm like, you bet, I'll be at your wedding. That'll be awesome. And then she gives me the date, and it was opening day of gun season, and I went, can't be at your wedding. And she says, I totally understand. I think that what we do is, you know, it's like I read a post on Facebook from a guy, and he said, we're taking these students up here to this ministry, and we're going to be sitting and we're going to be thinking and talking with people who interact and work with those that are in the sex trafficking, and so we're going to be sitting and thinking. And I'm thinking to myself, thinking? Why aren't you doing something? These people are doing, and you're going to be sitting around the table thinking with them? Quit thinking and start doing. Jesus was about action. He says, I've come to proclaim these things. He's saying, I've come to take action on it, and it starts a war. And if you get anything out of today, as I've just talked and talked and talked, if you get anything out of today experiencing Jesus, Jesus is calling on us to take action. And throughout the book of Luke, I've just been slapped in the face time and time again by what Jesus does and then by what I do. And I experience Jesus in Luke chapter 5, he calls Levi. And when he calls Levi, he says to Levi, come follow me. Well, Levi's not the guy that I would pick because Levi works for the IRS. Who likes the IRS? If you work for the IRS and you're in this room today, thank God those windows are locked, you know, because we may have a riot. Somebody watch the door and we'll be rid of it. You know, that's the way we feel. Imagine Jesus' disciples when he calls Levi. And then Levi says, hey, I want to introduce his friends to this guy that for the first time ever has accepted me. And he has this party. And notice what happens. The religious people show up. Now, in Luke 4, they wanted to throw him off a mountain. In Luke 5, he's called Levi and he says, hey, Levi, come follow me. Levi's followed him. Levi's introduced him to his friends. And the religious people are aware. They're on the outside, standing looking in, saying, what are you going to introduce to these people? What are you going to tell them? Are you going to condemn them for the way they've been living? Are you going to get after them? What are you going to do? And then they're talking to his disciples who are on the outside looking in. Why is he in there? When I got out of preaching school, well, first of all, when I was in preaching school, they said, hey, you've got to make some changes. You've got to change your beard. You've got to clean up. You got to, you know, and I'll never forget sitting with a couple of my instructors, and they said, we got to change the way you talk. I said, you got to change the way I talk. They said, look, you talk like this old boy that's from up some holler somewhere. I mean, the things that come out of your mouth, I mean, you know, part of the time we have to have a translator just to follow you around to figure out what you're saying. Like you were talking about some your wife cooking this chicken and she got a good scald on it. Nobody knew what that meant. Well, I don't have time to explain that to you if you don't know what that means. But here, you know, and so one of the guys comes to my defense, and one of my good friends from our Preston Road days is here today, and he'll know Alan McCormick. Alan McCormick stepped up. You know, remember how mouthy Alan was? He steps up. He's going to defend me. And he goes in and he goes, we have two students from South Africa, and you've never once told those guys that they need to change the way they talk. And one of the instructors says, but they sound intelligent. Yeah, man, that hurt, you know? You know? And so you're saying, I don't sound intelligent. Okay, I don't, you know? So here's the religious people. They're just going. And so here's the battle that's going on, and that's the battle that's going to go on within us. The battle that's going to go on within us is we're going to come to Jesus, we're going to be experiencing Jesus, and then all of a sudden we're going to think, oh, I've got to do something religious. And I think what we do is we tell people, okay, you come to Jesus, you shave, you cut your hair, you change, you do all of these things. You know, you're going to report down to the store to buy the coats and the ties for Sunday. Now, we're going to have casual Sundays so you cannot wear the tie and all of those things. And that's neither here nor there, nor there with me. But I did attend Preston Road Church, and you could not wait on communion. At the time that we attended Preston Road Church, you could not wait on communion if you didn't have a coat and a tie. If you were assigned a month, you were told wear a coat and a tie or they would not allow you. Now, that's changed. That's totally different there now. But at the time, that was their rules. Because I was assigned, and it was hot summertime the month I got. Well, I'm not wearing a coat and a tie when it's hot in summertime. And I get there, and the guy comes up and says, hey. And he goes, oh, I'll get an alternate today. You change that next Sunday. So we tell everybody, we say, here we do all these things. And you know, I watch my wife make biscuits one day, and I'm watching her, and she makes these awesome biscuits. I call them cat head biscuits because they're as big as cat's heads. And now she's cut the size down on me, keep me from doing it. But I watch her make those biscuits, and she's cutting them out perfectly. She's rolled that dough out from scratch, you know. And I know, man, there's going to be bacon and eggs and gravy, and she's cutting those things out. She gets down, there's that last little bit of dough, not enough to cut out. So she goes, puts it on the skillet or on the pan and bakes them. I watch people that are eating with us. Nobody will take that one biscuit that's been crunched up. We want the perfect cookie-cutted biscuit. We don't want the one that's crunched. Now, let me tell you something. I've eaten the one that's out of shape. It's just as good. But it'll be the last one I pick. Because my gravy doesn't run off it right. You can tear this other one apart, you know, the apple butter or the strawberry jelly or whatever goes on it, perfect. And the one that's a little bit odd, and I think that what we do is we see people and we come along and we go, okay, you've got to get in step with the program. We want to make them religious, and that's not it at all. Another time is in Luke 7 where Jesus is at a Pharisee's house and he's eating, and you know, everything is going well and everything is going good. And in walks this woman that's the sinful woman in town. We don't know exactly what she's done. There's a lot of speculation. She gets a bad rap at times. So here they are. The Pharisee, the religious people, are looking at her going, if he knew what kind of woman she is. She's weeping on his feet. She's drying his feet with her tears. And Jesus teaches a great lesson there. And he says, if you have a lot of debt forgiven, will you not love the person that forgives you? And he says, see this woman. See that woman. That's Jesus. That's experiencing Jesus. That's what our culture needs. It needs that full acceptance. But too many times, what happens to us is we catfish our culture. We catfish our culture with religion. And I'm not beating up on the church. That's not at all it. I'm beating up on when we become religious. Because religion and Jesus are like this. My first experience with this happened in 1992. I realized the church where I was preaching, I realized, man, there's some problems here. There's some issues. And it was a hornet's nest. And I poked it with a stick. And there was a few hornets came out and buzzed by me, and I survived. Hey, this is good. So the more we talked, the more I poked that thing. And finally I said to some guys, I said, all right, and so this is the way I'll picture it for you. I said, you hold the toe sack, I'll get the saw, I'll take my chainsaw, and I'll cut that limb off. And when that hornet's nest of religion falls, you catch it, we'll seal it up, and we'll drop it in the wiper. Sounds good. And the hornets swarmed. And before I knew it, I was walking down the road talking to myself. Because the church became an uproar. There was all-out war. And there was a lady that had quit coming to the... Her and her husband quit coming, and I went over to see them. I said, what's going on? I hate, you know, because there's so many casualties, so much hurt through all this. All we want to be about is Jesus. And I go over to see her, and she's gone into the kitchen because she was still very hospitable, even though I could tell she was very angry at me. And she's gone in to make a pot of coffee. And she comes back out, and she's got her hands on her hip, and she says, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. That's all you want to talk about. Just Jesus. And I will not be converted to Jesus. Jesus is Baptist doctrine. And I am a New Testament Christian, and that's all I'll ever be. And stomps back in there. Her husband looks at me and goes, I wouldn't drink the coffee if I were you. I'm dismissing myself. Turn with me to Luke chapter 12, and this is where we'll finish. I've got just a couple of minutes here. In Luke chapter 12, I wish I had hours and hours to talk with you. You guys have been so good to listen to me. In Luke chapter 12, Jesus has been to a Pharisee's house in chapter 11, and he's hurt the Pharisees and religious people's feelings because he's pointed out their flaws, and they're mad, and they're going to kill him. And Jesus comes along, and he says to his disciples, be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. Let me tell you, religion will spread. And let me tell you something. You know, there have been times, you know, I'll never forget going back to my elders, and I said, you know, hey, dear little Betty is so upset, and I told them what she said. I said she wouldn't be converted to Jesus. What's wrong with, you know? And one of my elders said, well, maybe over the next 6 or 7 Sundays you could just preach some real doctrinal sermons. I said, okay, what you got in mind? And so he listed everything that I needed to preach against, and I went, I just can't do it. I can't do it. And they said, well, if you can't do it, we're going to have a problem. Because let me tell you something, when you leave religion and you go to Jesus, religion will do everything. And you remember, you know, there's one good line from the third Godfather. Just when I thought I was out, they tried to drag me back in. And that's what religion will do to you. And let me tell you the threats that they'll make. If you read Luke chapter 12, the threats that are made there. You know, when you look at that, we always say that's the world, our culture saying that. It's not. It's religious people saying it. Jesus says, I want you to understand something. Religious people have no control over your eternal future. Saying to our culture and saying to ourselves, I'll be one more religious. I'll run down to the bookstore. I'll get the t-shirts. I'll get the fish symbol for my car. I'll get the bumper stickers. I'll get the Christian music. I'll listen to Christian music over and over and over again. It will not get us any closer to God. The only way, the way, the truth, and life is who? Jesus, right? It's not our churches. It's not our preachers. It's not our elders. It is Jesus. If we're going to experience Jesus, we've got to be about Jesus. How are we going to do it? And I want to close with these verses. Look at Luke 12, verse 11 and 12. When you are brought before the synagogues, the rulers and the authorities, do not worry about how you will defend yourselves or what you will say, for the Holy Spirit will teach you at that time what you should say. And my phone's telling me I'm out of time. Notice what he says. How are we going to do it? How are we going to experience Jesus? It's going to take the power of the Holy Spirit working in our lives to keep us from being drawn back in. If we're going to be the church that throws birthday parties for sinners, we're going to have to experience Jesus. Thanks for coming and being with me today. I appreciate it so much.